science, learning, business, community. You. Welcome to Think Works, the podcast for people who like to think. Because thinking is the hardest work there is. Come with us on a journey into the world of ideas with your host, Darren Smithson.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Think Works, the place where we like to do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And this week, after a few weeks of very heavy duty, kind of mind-blowing episodes, I thought we would take a little kind of, you know, mosey on down through memory lane and have a bit of a nerdy conversation about the forgotten computer giant. Now, who do I mean by the forgotten computer giant, and why am I talking about them? Well, Atari computers, and whether you... I mean, the problem with Atari was there's lots of different iterations, even in the 70s and 80s and early 90s. So, but if you take the Atari brand and their different divisions in the late 70s and in the 80s in particular, you discover that we had a computer company that was in, I think it was in the top five in Europe and the top 10 at one point in the world. And yet, hardly anyone even understands that or even knows the name Atari, but they definitely, if they do know the name, they don't associate it with computers. And it's really the computer side that I want to focus on, because I still have in my collection of computers, and they work fully, I have to say, is an Atari STE. I have an Atari Mega STE. I have an Atari TT, and I have an Atari Falcon. And all of them just blow my mind because they are so powerful, and what you can do on them in the minimum of 4 megabytes of memory. 4 megabytes, not gigabytes, megabytes. And or a 240 megabyte hard drive. What you can stack onto these computers is absolutely astonishing. Multitasking, multi-threading, DTP, music apps, video editing, word processing, and other office apps just, you know, coming out of your ears, really. There are just so many different applications that will run within these computers using just stuff that Windows just can only dream of in terms of the amount of resources needed to do so. So I'm going to talk about my history with Atari and allow me to nerd out why it's a shame that, along with the likes of Commodore Amiga and Acorn Computing, that these brands have disappeared. And we'll look at the reasons why they have as well. And I'll just give you some of my anecdotes as we go along. So it's time to nerd out. So get yourself into a nice comfy position and let's go all things Atari. Now, Atari itself was originally formed in 1972 by Nolan Bushnell and Ted Dabney. And initially it was focused purely on arcade games, with Pong being one of their first major successes. That's the one which most of us had in our home in the end when the Atari released the, if you remember, it was a console that actually had wood on the framework. Yeah, I'm not kidding you. And it was the one with the two bars that went up and down the screen with a little ball and a line in the middle, and the ball went up and down and you had to knock it so that your opponent couldn't get the ball back. And it was a massive, massive success, not only in the arcades, but actually when the first Atari games consoles were released. And what happened was it was just such a cultural phenomenon. And Nolan Bushnell famously said, "The best ideas lose their owners and take on lives of their own." And by that, what it means is both the creators of Atari were eventually forced out of the company. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes. And it was that transition to home computing that started the massive growth beyond the games consoles and the arcade games for Atari, but also eventually led to their demise. So in the late 1970s, Atari, as I've said, expanded into home computing, driven by the vision to bring arcade-like experiences to personal homes. And their early computers like the Atari 400 and 800 were well received for their graphics and sound capabilities, but they were entirely, 99.9% entirely games systems rather than home computers. But in 1976, Warner Communications acquired Atari because they could see potential in the video game industry, which was starting to grow geometrically each year. However, there was a video game crash in 1983, which was caused by both market saturation, lots of new competitors, and a real glut of poor quality games. And that led Warner in the end to sell Atari's consumer division to a guy called Jack Tramiel, or Tramiel, in 1984. And reflecting on the crash, I think one of the writers at the time, a pundit, he noted that Atari was like a shooting star that burned too bright and too fast. And that's part of the problem with Atari all along. Now, Jack Tramiel's impact, though, was quite insightful in some ways and damning in others. Now, Jack was a Holocaust survivor, and you know, which is just mind-blowing in its own right. And he became the head of Commodore and was known for his aggressive business tactics and cost-cutting measures. He was forced out of Commodore, and he, in anger, bought the Atari brand from Warner, and he restructured the computer company to focus on the development of something called the Atari ST. Now, his rivalry with Commodore was intense, and that stemmed really from the abrupt departure from the company that he'd helped build. But the rivalry fueled his determination not only to make Atari leading home computing, they actually in the end damned both companies, because the rivalry spilled over into the fans. Now, I was one of these people that had Atari computers, and I had Commodore Amiga computers. I had an Amiga 1200, Amiga 500, obviously. I had the Commodore CD TV, which was an absolutely amazing product, years ahead of its time, but branded in the wrong way, which is a real shame. So I had all these different systems, and I loved both the Atari and the Amigas, but just the constant attacking of one brand against the other by fans and buyers and by the magazines and by the companies themselves, it just never, ever stopped. And I'm going to come back to that a little bit later in this episode, because it was that rivalry that actually damned and destroyed both organizations in the long run. Now, we need to also blame Jack for this. He was known as saying, business is war, which highlighted his competitive nature. But he also didn't understand about the need to build collegiate alliances. And he really offended, he really rubbed up a lot of the developers the wrong way with aggressive tactics. And it kind of made it harder for Atari to form alliances that would last and would generate a great platform of software and a great platform of games going forward in the future. Now, I was one of the lucky people that went to buy a home computer, and instead of getting an ST in a discovery pack, I actually got the STE, the enhanced version, and it just blew my mind. I could not believe. Yes, initially I bought it because I wanted a games computer, because I was spending too much money on Defender in arcades, and I thought, do you know what? If I buy this, it'll save me money in the long run, because I won't be going to arcades to play computer games. What I quickly realized, however, that the ST was capable of so much more than just gains. For banging, I think I had a 1 megabyte STE initially. I upgraded that to its maximum 4 megabyte, and I also went back to my local Dixon's at the time and bought an external hard drive, a 30 megabyte hard drive. 30 megabytes, I kid you not, it was built bigger than most of the laptops that you buy today with double-decked. You know, just put them on top of one another, and you probably had the size of this 30 megabyte hard drive, which made a racket. But on 30 megabytes, you could get a whole office suite, DTP packages, which were a match for anything that was used professionally. You could get other games on there and so on. So it was absolutely brilliant. And eventually, you could even multitask using Multitoss in 4 megabytes. But I get ahead of myself. So let's start again. So in 1984, after the video game crash, and Jack purchased Atari's home console and computer divisions, the division was renamed Atari Corporation. The remaining part of the original Atari Inc. became Atari Games Inc., and Warner later partnered with Namco to form Atari Games Corporation, which took control of the arcade division. Now, this was key because the Atari, although Jack bought the Atari computer division, he didn't have access to the lucrative money that was coming in from the arcade division. That went back to Warner's and Namco, while Atari Games retained the arcade rights and the right to use the Atari name with the game suffix. Are you confused yet? Yes, and there was later stuff going on with the whole, you know, Atari Corporation when it failed, merged with JTS Corp, another Jack Tramiel company. And that was eventually acquired by Hasbro Interactive. However, we want to focus on these Atari computers, so let's go back to that. In 1985, the Atari ST was released, much fanfare, highlighting a revolutionary use in the branding of the Motorola 68000 CPU. Which was competitively priced against Apple and Commodore, and the computer was, and the Motorola chip was designed to incorporate graphics capability within the chip itself, unlike the Intel chip, which had to have additional processors or co-processors. The Atari ST featured a graphical user interface called TOS, or the Tramiel operating system. Sometimes it was kind of like GEM, if people are old enough to remember that, on the Windows interface. But it was built from the ground up. It wasn't something sitting on top of a disk operating system, for example, like GEM and Windows were on the Intel computing range, the IBM PC. It featured MIDI ports as well, making it a popular computer with musicians and tech enthusiasts. And it had a wealth of games ready-made to port across to it, but also a growing library of software. In 1989, which is when I got involved with Atari, other than the original home games console, the STE was released, and that had enhanced graphics, more colours, greater sound capabilities, blitter chip, etc., etc., all these additional features, and it basically was well ahead of its time when you look at what was going on with the Wintel computers, the PC architecture at the time. The Atari ST just walked all over these computers for capability and ability to adapt to different types of usage. And I bought the ST. I was one of the lucky ones that got one of the first STEs in the Discovery Extra Pack. And it just absolutely blew my mind. Very quickly, I realized that this thing could do a lot more than just games. The games were great, don't get me wrong, and it came with about 30 games in this pack. But it also had BASIC, and it had a word processor in there. And I found out about all the other applications that were being developed, and very quickly I built this STE up to have its own monitors. I had a mono monitor. I had a colour monitor that was specifically for the Atari STE as opposed to just plugging into the telly. I had the hard drive and I had a second external, in this case, but a second floppy disk drive which plugged into the port. It was just such a great system for playing with and adapting and seeing what else you could do. And it really was something that got my computing skills to a level that I haven't, you know, that are more advanced than most people, and certainly at the time, more advanced than just about everyone else in that period. It actually led to my first real job, which was with Businessland. So the impact on home computing was massive, because it literally was outselling just about anything else in the market. The Commodore Amiga 500 was the main competitor, obviously, and that's where this fierce rivalry really started, where Amiga users hated Atari users, and Atari users hated Amiga users, and Amiga, Commodore Amiga, and Atari Corp, they hated one another, and it just became this massive, everyone looking at what everyone else was doing within that little circle, and they ignored what was going on outside of that circle, and that's what led to their end. Now, the high-end models, the Mega ST, the TT, and the Falcon, the Mega ST was released in 1987, and the design of it looked like a traditional PC. It had an external keyboard. It had an internal hard drive and floppy disk drive. It had enhanced expansion capabilities. And that was followed by the Atari TT, which was released in 1990, which was aimed at the high-end market with a faster processor and enhanced graphics. And my TT, I mean, the speed of it is astonishing. And the way that it can multitask with all kinds of different flavors of multitasking operating systems that built on top of the original Tremel operating system that shipped with it is absolutely astonishing. It's just such a beautiful computer. And it really did look like Atari were going to corner that market. But then it all started to go wrong. They priced the TT incorrectly when they first launched it in the UK. And that kind of stunted and they also couldn't get enough of them manufactured initially when they launched. The market was moving on as well. And this is what undid both Atari and Commodore Amiga, because they refused to license their technology. Now, here's what happened. The IBM PC architecture, which is the PC that we all know and love now, which had Windows, which was growing in leaps and bounds and capabilities, they licensed the technology. So literally, instead of having a couple of manufacturers making hardware or making the actual computers themselves and some third-party compatible hardware, literally the PC architecture went from the initial release to having thousands of companies building PC architecture PCs and using the same components, which meant the price ratio for a PC came crashing lower and lower and lower each year, whereas the Atari prices didn't change. The Commodore Amiga prices didn't change. And when they launched the high-end computers, it was the same with the Amiga 4000, for example. The prices were too high compared to the power capability of the PC clone. And that eventually is what did for them, because the problem was, what really upset me was, I wrote, because I used to collect all the Atari magazines and all the Amiga magazines, and I wrote letter after letter to, I think there were 7 magazines in total at the time, explaining that we needed to change our attitude as fans of the platforms. We needed to look at what Wintel were doing, i.e. Microsoft and the Intel architecture and the AMD that came along later. But we needed to be aware of what was happening. The grass was growing around our feet because we were too busy locking nose to nose, knocking spots off each other, and we didn't really understand or didn't take notice of the fact that suddenly a PC, a home computer at half the price of a whole TT or Mega STE or an Amiga 3000 or an Amiga 4000 was capable then suddenly of matching it ounce for ounce in terms of power and capability. And that is what, in the end, destroyed both companies. And Atari realized that they needed to seriously improve their computers too late. They launched the Atari Falcon in 1992. It was technically superb. It had a DSP chip, which was only available in the next computer launched by Steve Jobs at the time. But again, they couldn't get enough of the model out. Plus, they released the Falcon in the old ST case. So it was basically, if you remember, the ST and the Amiga 500 and the Amiga 1200, they all came in a keyboard with a back at the end where all the computer bits were in there. So it was an all-in-one system. They needed to release the Falcon really as a proper PC architecture type system, but they couldn't get the design out. They couldn't get enough components together. They couldn't get enough chassis together. So the release of the Falcon was kind of dented by that fact. I loved my Falcon. I've still got it. It still works. It's been upgraded to its maximum RAM. It's multitasking. Multitask came with it. Atari Works came with it, which is, you know, just like Microsoft Works used to be, and all kinds of other bits and pieces. But it didn't take off because they couldn't get enough of them out there fast enough, and the price was slightly too high, and the market had basically been massively eroded. What was happening was people were growing up and they were getting into a work environment, and in their work environment they had a PC with running Windows. And what was happening is, if they were getting at home, instead of being able to do work at home using the Atari computers, which did have some compatibility at the time through different file conversion things and what have you, people, when it got time to buy in a new computer, or they got money together with the price ratio drop, as I've said on the Wintel architecture, they were thinking, oh, well, actually, I might as well buy a home PC. And then I can bring work from home, and it's entirely compatible. And I can also, you know, I've still got my PlayStation for games and so on. And by this time, Atari had been squeezed out of the market on both fronts. Same with Commodore and same with Acorn, because they even moved into, with the price ratio of price and power, they moved into the education market, which forced Atari's TT and Mega STE out, and the Acorn systems, the 3010, 3020, etc., out as well. So all these things were going on. It's a real shame, because I think personally the Falcon and the TT were absolutely amazing computers. The Amiga 4000 and the 1200 were amazing computers. The Acorn 3020 and the Acorn 7000 were amazing computers, but they didn't license their technology. They didn't stop trying to score points against each other rather than looking at what was happening in the PC architecture world, and that was the problem. So in a nutshell, if you look at the fact that you could bring work home and it was entirely 100% compatible with Word at office, in your office, and Word when you got home, and Excel and so on, rather than you had an Excel compatible spreadsheet with Atari Works, people just decided, no, I think I need to actually have ease and convenience. And yeah, it was great, this computer at the time, but I need to move on now because I've grown up. I want to be able to bring work home to show my boss that I'm really good. So it was a real issue, and it destroyed them in the end, and it's a real shame. And then Atari decided to lurch back to the games side and launch the Atari Jaguar, which was the world's first 64-bit games console, but it was too late. Sega and Nintendo and the new kid on the block, Sony, had kind of destroyed the games console market for Atari and Commodore as well. Commodore did the same thing. Amiga CD32 came too late to save them because they lost their marketplace even on the games consoles at home. And the other problem with the CD32 and the Atari Jaguar is the fact that the games, most of the games, were really poor quality. They were not sufficiently advanced enough to compete against the likes of Sony, Nintendo, and Sega. And even Sega got knocked out, really, by Sony in the end. But that's a story for another nerdy episode at some point in this series. Now, Atari do still exist, although it's still gone through several more changes in ownership and focus. It's the brand itself is currently owned by a French holding company called Atari SA, and they primarily focus on video games, consumer hardware, licensing, and blockchain. The original Atari Inc. no longer exists in its original form, but the brand continues to be associated with a legacy of classic games and consoles, and there are actively developing new games and hardware, including the Atari 2600 Plus console, which basically means that they're launching these all-in-one systems with all the games actually programmed in the system. And then eventually Atari did license the technology too late. So you had like Hades and Eagle and Medusa, which were very, you know, Germany really held on to its Ataris as long as it could. And these clone systems were actually really powerful computers with a very specific focus on multimedia and high-end DTP. But it was too late. But there are still rumors that someone is trying to launch a new Atari home computer which has all the features of the Atari Falcon, but mixed with modern technology, built in Ethernet, built in USB, high-speed processors and the lot and the like. That would be, I think, for me, the nirvana of having a new home computer. However, the fact is Atari and Commodore, Amiga and Acorn Computing, they all fell victim to their own hubris and they refused to look outside of their own little worlds about what was really going on in business and then in education and then finally at home with the Wintel architecture. It's a real shame. Now, Jack Tramiel, he never really recovered from those challenges and he stepped back from day-to-day operations anyway in the late 1980s because of it. His son had health issues. But by the time he returned in 1995, it was too late. Tramiel sold Atari to JTS Corporation and that effectively ended Atari Corporation. And Jack is no longer with us anyway. But to me, Atari is one of those kind of lost opportunities. They had an opportunity, really, if they had just knuckled down, focused on their core strengths, licensed their technology instead of being jealous of it and making sure that no one else could have it, and understood that they needed to move with the times in a much more collegiate and nimble business type way rather than the old style win-win-win, so long as I win and you lose. That aggressive attitude rubbed up so many developers the wrong way, and they weren't willing to take the risk of the Atari Jaguar, for example, and they weren't willing to take the risk with the Atari Falcon because they've been burned so many times in the past. As for me, Atari will always be my favorite computing platform. Yes, I do like the Acorn computing platform, and I do love the Amiga platform. I've still got my CDTV. I've still got my Amiga 4000. I need to get replacement 1200 because mine died a death, unfortunately. But just when the excitement and the little thrill that I get when I switch on one of the Atari systems and the Atari logo comes up on screen, it just blows my mind that they were able to do so much with so little memory, so little processing power, so little hard disk space. I love it. And the one thing that I really love about the Atari platform is that you could adapt it to work the way that you wanted to work. To a certain extent, Commodore Amigas forced you still to work the way that Commodore Amiga felt you should work. Windows definitely doesn't allow you. They might say that it does, but it doesn't. It basically, PC architecture says, this is how you work, and there is no other way to work, and that's it. Take it or leave it. And the problem is with, 90% of the world's computer market, or whatever the most recent ratio is, they can do that. Although, Ubuntu, guys, if you've got a PC, an older PC, and you're fed up with Windows updates, and you know that Windows 10 is coming to an end, and you can't get this computer that you've got to go to Windows 11 without buying a new computer, invest in Ubuntu. It's a free operating system. There is a paid version, but the free version is absolutely astonishing, and it brings life to your older computers. I'll probably do an episode on Ubuntu when I want to do another nerd out, but in the meantime, I'll have enjoyed my little journey down memory lane. I'll have a couple of anecdotes for you, actually. The Atari Falcon, I got my Atari Falcon because I'd written these letters to the Atari and Commodore magazines, and eventually I got offered a freelance role writing for Atari ST format. And as part of that, I was sent an Atari Falcon by one of the distributors at the time to do a review. I loved it. I loved it so much. I rang the distributor up and said, can we do a deal? And they sold it to me at cost, because they liked the review anyway, but they sold it to me at cost. And I'll tell you, it's just, it sits there. I get it out. I haven't got room to have them all out at the same time, but I kind of do them on a rolling basis. And I just love it. I switched it on and it just hums, off it goes. A little hard drive clicks away, 210 megabyte hard drive, multitasking, with all kinds of DTP packages and graphics packages and music packages. It just absolutely rocks my world. And I love the platform. There's just something sweet about the way an Atari computer wants to please, I think. Yeah, all of them have their little flaws, and they all have their little ways of doing things that sometimes you think, why have you built it that way, or why do you behave like that? But it's part of the endearing process of using and owning an Atari computer. And I'm sure there are lots of Atari users out there that feel exactly the same way. If you're a Commodore Amiga user, you're probably going to say the same thing. I am a Commodore Amiga user. I do love my Amigas, but it's the Atari, I think, that owns my heart. Absolutely superb. So anyway, that's the end of the episode. I've enjoyed it. I've got a new kind of trick here. So I've got to the end of the episode, and that means it's time to tell you about the forum. So if you go to darreninform.com/forum, there's a post for this particular episode. Come and tell me your favorite computing platform of yesteryear, what you think of Atari and the Atari system and the Amiga users. Be polite, because I will do an episode on the Amiga platform at some point, and you'll want to keep Atari fans happy. I mean, yeah, you tell me why you think the Amiga's better, but don't do it in such a way that I was going to use a colourful colloquialism there, but that don't actually run down the Atari. Just tell us why you love the Amiga. I think that's what we'll say. But in the meantime, everyone, take care. I know it's a nerdy episode, and it doesn't really change the world in any way, shape, or form, but I just think it's interesting to look at why companies fail and part of the reason is you can become so obsessed with your competitor that you don't notice that there are other competitors springing up all around you, and that's what happened. Right, take care everyone. I'll see you all soon. I've no idea what I'm going to do next week, but it'll probably be a return to something a bit more meaty, and I'll stop being a nerd for that particular episode and bring something for you to think about. But in the meantime, take care. I'll see you all very soon. That was my new trick. So I've got this new system here that brings me lots of little bits and pieces that I'm trying to work out how to use. As the episodes progress, you'll find different special effects suddenly appear because I've got the machine that can do it. Take care, everyone. I'll see you soon. Bye for now.
Would like to find out more, or join in with the conversation, our forum has a corresponding post for you to comment in. Simply go to darreninform.com/thinkworksforum and join in the fun. Or you can join the Facebook page by searching for @DarrenInform for news, tips and other helpful strategies. The show was hosted by Darren Smithson, and the music is by Alexander Nakarada. You have been listening to ThinkWorks, the podcast for thinkers.